was crawling slowly southward, blanketing the entire world. It meant that the Warlock Lord was coming. "What in heaven's name is that?" Panamon trailed off into stunned silence. Shay shook his head absently. There could be no answer to that question. This was something beyond the understanding of mortal men. The three stood looking at the massive wall for several long moments, as if waiting for something more to happen. Finally, Kel'Thuzet stooped to peer carefully at the hard grassland before them, moving forward several yards at a time until he was some distance away. Then he rose and pointed directly into the center of the ominous black haze. Panamon started, his face frozen. "The gnome is running directly into that stuff," he muttered angrily. "If we do not catch him before he reaches it, the darkness will hide his trail completely. We will have lost him." Several miles ahead, on the graying fringes of the blackened wall of mist and haze, the small, bent form of Orlfane hesitated momentarily in its exhausting flight as the greenish eyes peered fearfully, uncomprehendingly, into the swirling darkness. The gnome had been moving northward since his escape from the three strangers during the early hours of the morning, running while his strength held out, then pushing forward in a shuffling trot, always with one eye straying back, waiting for the inevitable pursuit. His mind no longer functioned in a rational manner. For several weeks he had lived on instinct and luck, preying off the dead, avoiding the living. He could not force himself to think of anything beyond survival, a gut instinct to live another day among those who did not want him, would not accept him as one of their own. Even his own people had turned him away, scorning him as a creature lower than the insects that crawled the earth at their feet. It was a savage land that surrounded him, a land in which one could not survive alone for very long. Yet he was alone, and the mind that had once been sane had slowly turned inward on itself, shutting away the fears that were embedded there until madness began to take hold, and all reason began to die. Yet the inevitable death did not come easily, as fate intervened with twisted humor and favored the outcast with a final glimmer of false hope, placing in his hands the means by which to regain the seemingly unattainable warmth of human companionship once more. While still a scavenger, still fighting a losing battle to stay alive, the desperate gnome had learned of the presence of the legendary Sword of Shannara, its awesome secret gasped in faint warning from the rigid lips of one dying on the Strelaheim Plains, the blinded eyes failing as the life thread snapped. Then the sword was in his grasp, the key to power over mortal men in the hands of Orlfane. But the madness lingered, the fears and doubts wrenching ceaselessly at his failing reason as he pondered a course of action. This fatal hesitation resulted in the gnome's capture and the loss of the coveted sword, the lifeline back to his own kind. Reason gave way to despair and raving, and the already badly unbalanced mind collapsed. There was room now for only one burning, haunting thought. The sword must be his, or his life was over. He boasted irrationally to his unsuspecting captors that the sword was his, that only he knew where it could be found, unwittingly betraying his last chance to keep possession. But the strangers failed to read between the lines, dismissing him too hastily as merely crazed. Then came the escape, the seizure of the sword, and the flight northward. He paused now, staring blankly at the mysterious wall of blackness that barred his way northward. "Yes, northward, northward," he mused, smiling crookedly, the eyes widening madly. There lay safety and redemption for an outcast. Deep within, he could feel an almost uncanny desire to run back the way he had come. But the thought remained locked inescapably in his mind that his salvation lay in the Northland alone. It was there that he would find the Master. The Warlock Lord. His gaze dropped momentarily to the ancient blade strapped tightly to his waist, its length dragging clumsily in the dirt behind him. The gnarled yellow hand strayed briefly down over the carved handle, touching the engraved hand raised high with burning torch, the gilt paint already flecking off in chips to reveal the burnished hilt beneath. He clutched the handle tightly, as if trying to draw his own strength from its sturdy grip. Fools. Fools all that had not treated him with the respect he should command. For he was the bearer of the sword, the keeper of the greatest legend their world had ever known, and it would be he who would... He shut out the thought hastily, fearful that even the void about him could read his mind, peer into his secret thoughts, and steal them away. Ahead, the frightening darkness waited for him to enter. Orlfane was afraid of this, as he was of everything else, but there was no other way to go. Dimly he recalled those who followed. The giant troll, the man with one hand, whose hatred he instinctively sensed, and the youth who was half man, half elf. There was something the gnome could not explain about the latter, something that nagged with unshakable persistence at his already beleaguered mind. Shaking his rounded head blankly, the little man moved forward into the graying fringes of the dark wall, the air about him dead and silent. He did not look back until the blackness was all about him and the silence had disappeared in a sudden rush of wind and chilling moisture. When he did glance back briefly, he saw to his horror that there was nothing there. Nothing but the same blackness that lay all about in heavy, impenetrable layers. The wind began to rush violently as he moved on, and he became aware of other creatures in the darkness. They came first as a vague awareness in his mind, then as soft cries that seemed to seep through the haze and cling inquisitively about him. At last they appeared as living bodies, touching softly with cringing fingers the flesh of his person. He laughed in maddened frenzy, knowing somehow that he was no longer in a world of living creatures, but a world of death, where soulless beings wandered in hopeless search of escape from their eternal prison. He stumbled on amidst them, laughing, talking, even singing gaily, his mind no longer a part of his mortal being. All about him the creatures of the dark world followed in cringing companionship, knowing that the maddened mortal was almost one of them. It was all a matter of time. When the mortal life was gone, he would be as they were, lost forever. Orlfane would be with his own kind at last. Almost 2 hours passed, winding away with the slow, deliberate sweep of the morning sun, and the three pursuers stood on the fringes of the wall of mist into which their quarry had disappeared. They paused as he had done, silently studying the forbidding blackness that marked the threshold to the kingdom of the Warlock Lord. The haze seemed to lie upon the deadened earth in layers, each one a little darker as the eyes peered deeper into the unseen center, each one a little less friendly as the mind envisioned the heart's undetermined fears. Panamon Creel paced back and forth in measured steps, his eyes never leaving the darkness as he attempted to muster enough confidence to push on. The massive Kel'thuset, after a cursory study of the ground and a short motion to indicate that the gnome had indeed gone northward, lapsed into statue-like immobility, the great arms folded and the eyes faint slits of life beneath the heavy brow. There was no choice, Shay reasoned, his mind already determined, his hopes not yet dampened by the thought of temporarily losing the trail in the darkness. He had regained something of the old faith in Providence, certain since they had begun this pursuit that Orlfane would be found and the sword regained. There was something pulling at him, reassuring him, confiding in him that he would not fail. Something deep within his heart that gave him fresh courage. He waited impatiently for Panamon to give the word to proceed. "There is a madness in what we're doing," the Scarlet Thief muttered as he passed by Shay once more. "I can feel death in the very air of this wall." He trailed off sharply, halting at last, waiting for Shay to speak. "We must go on," Shay responded quickly, tonelessly. Panamon looked slowly at his giant friend, but the rock troll made no movement. The other waited a moment longer, clearly disturbed that Kel'Thuzet had ventured no opinion since they had undertaken this journey into the Northland. Before, when it was just the two of them, the giant had always indicated agreement when Panamon had looked to him for support. But of late, the troll was strangely noncommittal. At last the adventurer nodded affirmatively, and the three plunged resolutely into the graying haze. The plains were level and barren, and for a while they moved forward without difficulty. Then, as the mists gradually deepened about them, their vision began to fail badly until they appeared to one another as little more than vague shadows. Panamon quickly called a momentary halt, extracted a length of rope from his pack, and suggested they tie themselves together to avoid becoming separated. When this was accomplished, they continued on. There was no sound save the occasional faint scrape of their boots on the hardened earth. The mist was not damp, but nevertheless seemed to cling to their exposed skin in a most unpleasant manner, recalling to Shay the unhealthy, fetid air of the mist marsh. It appeared to be moving faster the deeper they proceeded, yet they could feel no wind propelling its widening gusts. Finally it closed in from all directions, and the three were left in total darkness. They walked for what must have been hours, but their sense of time became confused in the soundless black haze that encased their fragile mortal beings. The rope held them back from the loneliness of death which permeated the mist, its strands reaching not so much to one another as to the world of sunlight and vision they had left behind them. This place into which they had dared to venture was a limbo world of half-life, where the senses were stifled and fears grew in an unfettered imagination. One could feel the presence of death fragmenting the darkness, a touch here, a touch there, brushing softly the mortal creature it would one day claim. The unreal became almost acceptable in this strange darkness, as all the restrictions of the human senses vanished into dreamlike remembrances, and the visions of the inner mind, the subconscious, pushed quickly to the fore, searching for recognition. For a time it was almost pleasant to be able to lapse into this indulgence of the subconscious, and then it was neither enjoyable nor disagreeable, but simply deadening. For a long time this latter feeling persisted, soothing, caressing their minds into disinterest and vague boredom, leaving both bodies and minds with the sluggish drowsiness of the ancient lotus eaters. Time disappeared entirely, and the world of mist stretched on forever. From out of the dim recesses of the world of life came the slow sensation of burning pain, coursing through Shay's deadened body with shocking abruptness. With a sudden wrenching, his mind was torn free of the listlessness which cloaked its thoughts, and the searing sensation grew sharper in his breast. Still drowsy, his body strangely weightless, he groped tiredly at his tunic, his hand coming to rest at last on the source of the irritation. a small leather pouch. Then his mind snapped into alertness as he clutched tightly the precious elf stones, and he was awake once more. In sudden horror, he realized that he was stretched full length upon the earth, no longer walking, no longer even aware of where he had been going. Frantically, he clutched the rope about his waist and pulled violently. He was rewarded by a sluggish groan from the other end. His companions were still with him. Struggling heavily, wearily, to his feet once more, he realized what had happened. This frightening limbo world of eternal sleep had almost claimed them as its victims, lulling them, soothing them, dulling their senses until they had fallen and drifted closer and closer to quiet death. Only the power of the stones had saved them. Shay felt incredibly weak, but summoning the little strength that remained, he tugged and pulled desperately on the length of rope, dragging Kelset and Panamon Creel back from the edge of the abyss of death, back to the world of the living. He shouted wildly as he yanked on the rope, then stumbled to them, kicking at the listless bodies until the pain brought them back to consciousness. Long minutes later, they were roused sufficiently to be aware of what had happened. With the awakening, the spirit of life revived the will to survive, as both forced themselves to their feet. They hung on to one another with sleep-ridden limbs closely entangled, their minds fighting to remain conscious. Then they began to walk, stumbling blindly in the unbroken darkness, one foot before the other, each step an incredible struggle of mind and body. Shay was in the lead, uncertain of his direction, but relying on the instinct sparked by the powerful elf stones to guide him. For a long time they pushed ahead through the endless dark, fighting to remain awake and alert as the deadening mists swirled lazily about them. The strange, sleep-like sensation of death clung to them, trying to overpower their tired minds, silently urging their exhausted bodies to accept the welcome rest that waited. But the mortals resisted with iron determination, their strength a small fragment of courage and desperation that, when all else was gone, still would not quit. At last, the deep weariness began to draw back into the dark haze. Death had failed this time to stifle the will to survive. There would be other times for these three, but for the moment, they would live on a little longer in the world of men. So the sluggishness passed away and the drowsiness faded, not in the normal manner of sleep, but with quiet warnings that it would come again. The three companions were suddenly the same as before, the muscles unfettered as if there had been no sleep, the mind released rather than awakened. There was no inner desire to stretch or to yawn, but only a lingering memory that the sleep of death was a slumber without sensation, without time. For long minutes, no one spoke, though all were fully revived, each still savoring in unspoken fear and quiet desperation the taste of dying they had experienced, knowing that one day its inevitable touch would claim them forever. For several brief seconds, they had stood at the edge of life and gazed into the forbidden land beyond, something no mortal was permitted to do before the end of his natural life. To have been this close was numbing, frightening, even maddening. They should not have survived. But then the memories were gone, all but the dim knowledge that the three had narrowly escaped dying. Regaining their composure, they continued to search for an end to the confining blackness. Panamon spoke once to Shay in low tones, asking whether he knew if they were proceeding in the right direction. The reluctant response was a curt nod. What difference did it make if he did not know, the little Veilman wondered to himself angrily. What other direction would they take? If his instincts were wrong, then there was nothing left that could help them anyway. The elf stones had saved him once. He would trust them again. He wondered how Orlfane had fared in his attempt to pass through the strange wall of mist. Perhaps the maddened gnome had found his own way to escape its deadening effects, but it seemed unlikely. And if the little fellow had fallen by the way, then the sword was lost somewhere in the impenetrable blackness, and they would never regain it in time. This unpleasant prospect caused the Veilman to pause mentally for several long moments, weighing the possibilities of the sword lying about in this haze, perhaps only yards away from them, waiting for someone to discover it once again. Then abruptly, the darkness faded into dingy gray, and the wall of mist was behind them. It happened so quickly that they were caught completely by surprise. 1 minute they were shrouded in blackness, barely able to distinguish each other, and the next they were standing in shocked silence beneath the leaden gray skies of the Northland. They took a moment to study the country into which they had emerged. It was the most dismal land Shay had ever seen, even more forbidding than the dreary lowlands of Cleet and the frightening black oaks in the distant Southland. The terrain was barren and desolate, a gray-brown earth totally devoid of sunlight and plant life. Not even the hardiest scrub brush had survived, a mute warning that this was indeed the kingdom of the Dark Lord. The earth stretched away to the north in low, uneven hills of hardened dirt, unbroken by even a wisp of grassland. Blunted, sprawling boulders thrust upright into the dim, gray horizon, and in places the lowlands were gutted by dusty gullies where rivers had long since dried away. There was no sound of life anywhere, not even the faint hum of insects to break the haunting stillness. Nothing remained in this once living land but death. Far to the north, jutting sharply into the vacant sky, rose a low series of treacherous-looking peaks. Without being told, Shane knew that this was the home of Barona, the warlock lord.
"What do you propose now?" Panamon Creel demanded. "We've lost the trail entirely. We don't even know if our gnome friend got out of that stuff alive. In fact, I don't see how he could have managed it."
"We'll have to keep looking for him," Shay replied evenly.
"While those flying creatures keep looking for us," the other pointed out quickly. "The odds becoming a little more than I bargained for, Shay. I don't mind telling you that I'm rapidly losing interest in this chase, especially when I don't know what it is I'm fighting. We almost died back there, and I couldn't even see what was killing us."
Shay nodded understandingly, suddenly in command of the situation. For the first time in his life, Panamon Creel was worried about staying alive, even if it meant backing away with a severely wounded pride. It was up to Shay to make sure that the journey would continue now. Kel'Thuzad stood apart from the two men, the soft brown eyes fixed on the Veilman as the heavy brows knitted in understanding. Again, Shay was struck with the intelligence he saw, deep-rooted and unimposing in the gentle eyes of the massive creature. He still knew nothing about the giant troll, but there was a great deal he wanted to learn. Kel'Thuzad was the key to some strange, important secret that not even Panamon Creel knew, for all his boasting of their close friendship. "The choices are limited," the little Veilman replied at last. "We can search for Orlfane on this side of the mist and take our chances with the skull creatures, or we can risk another journey back." He trailed off ominously, leaving the thought unspoken as he watched Panamon turn a shade paler.
"I'm not going back through that. At least not right away," the unnerved thief declared vehemently.
He shook his head emphatically, the piked hand raising quickly to ward off the very air that carried such an insane suggestion. Then, almost sheepishly, the familiar broad smile returned as the old Panamon Creel reassumed command of his wits.
He was too hardened an individual, too much a professional in the game of life to allow anything to frighten him for very long. Grimly, he fought down the memories of what he had felt while stumbling blindly through the dead world within the darkness, calling on his long experience as an adventurer and border thief to rebuild his confidence. If he was destined to die in this venture, then he would meet it with the courage and determination that had carried him through so many hard years. "Now let's think this situation through a minute," he mused, pacing away from them and back again. The old swagger and grit were returning. If the gnome did not make it out of the mist barrier, then the sword will still be in there. We can get it any time. But if he escaped, as we did, then where? He paused in mid-sentence, his eyes studying the surrounding countryside as he tried to narrow the possibilities. Kel'Thuzad stepped quickly to his side and pointed directly north to the jagged peaks that marked the borders of the Skull Kingdom. "Yes, of course, you're right again," Panamon agreed with a faint smile. "He must have been heading there all along. It's the only place he could go." "The Warlock Lord?" Shay asked quietly. "Is he taking the sword directly to the Warlock Lord?" The other nodded briefly. Shay paled slightly at the prospect of tracking the elusive gnome right up to the doorstep of the Spirit King without even the comparatively strong mystical prowess of Alanon to aid them. If they were discovered, they would be entirely defenseless except for the elf stones. While the stones might have prevailed over the Skullbearers, it seemed highly doubtful that they would have any chance against a creature as awesome as Brona. The first question was whether or not Orlfane had even managed to get through the treacherous mist. They decided to follow the fringes of the rolling wall westward in an effort to cut across any tracks the fleeing gnome might have left once he broke through into this region. If they discovered no trail in that direction, they would try going eastward for the same distance. If there was still no trace of Orlfane, then they must assume that he had fallen in the killing haze, and they would be forced to re-enter it in an effort to find the sword. No one favored the latter alternative, but Shay gave them some reassurance by promising to chance using the power of the elf stones to locate the missing talisman. Using the precious stones would undoubtedly alert the spirit world of their presence, but it was a gamble they would have to take if they expected to find anything in that impenetrable blackness. Quickly now, the three began to hike northward, Kel'Thuzad's keen eyes studying the barren ground for traces of the gnome's footsteps. Heavy cloud banks blocked out the entire sky, enfolding the northland in an unfriendly gray haze. Shay tried to estimate how much time had lapsed since they had entered the wall of mist, but he was unsure. It could have been a few hours or even a few days. In any event, the grayness of the land was deepening steadily, signaling the approach of nightfall and a temporary end to their search for Orlfane. Overhead, the massing gray clouds had begun to grow darker and were rolling heavily across the hidden skies. The wind had picked up, gusting sharply through the barren hills and gullies, pushing angrily at the few clumps of boulders which barred its progress. The temperature was dropping quickly, turning so much colder that the three were forced to wrap themselves tightly in their hunting cloaks as they pushed ahead. Before long, it became apparent that a storm was building, and they realized angrily that a heavy rain would wash away all traces of any footprints left by the fleeing gnome. And if they were forced to guess whether or not he had escaped. But in a rare stroke of good fortune, Kel'Thuzad discovered footprints on the barren earth. Footprints that came out of the wall of mist and continued northward. The rock troll showed Panamon Creel that the prints indicated a small person, probably a gnome, and that whoever it was had been weaving and staggering badly, either from injury or exhaustion.
Elated by this discovery and certain that they had found Orlfane once again, they followed the faint trail northward, moving at a much faster pace than before. Forgotten was the ordeal of that morning. Forgotten was the threat of the omnipresent warlock lord, whose kingdom lay directly in their path. Forgotten was the exhaustion and despair they had felt since losing the precious sword of Shannara. Orlfane would not escape them again. Overhead, the skies continued to darken. Far to the west came the deep sound of thunder, an ominous rumble that was carried by the increasing force of the wind across the length and breadth of the Northland. It was going to be a terrific storm, almost as if nature had decided to breathe new life into this dying land by washing it clean so that it might again be fertile ground for living things. The air was bitingly cold, and although the temperature had ceased falling, the gusting wind knifed through the garments of the three travelers. Yet they scarcely felt it, their eyes scanning anxiously the northern horizon for any sign of their quarry. The trail was growing fresher. He was somewhere just ahead. The face of the land had begun to change noticeably. The barren countryside had retained its basic feature, an iron-hard ground studded with scattered rock and boulder clumps, but it had grown steadily more hilly and rutted, making travel increasingly difficult. The cracked, dry earth was particularly difficult to maneuver because it lacked the forms of vegetation that normally offered decent footing. As the hills and vales rose higher and dipped more sharply, the three pursuers found themselves slipping and clawing their way forward. The rising west wind had grown in force to an ear-splitting howl, at times nearly sweeping the unprotected men off their feet as it rushed across the desolate hilltops in frantic bursts. The loose topsoil flew in all directions at once in the merciless grip of the wind, striking at the skin, eyes, and mouths of the three men in stinging, choking thrusts. It soon became so bad that the entire countryside was swathed in wind and dirt, as if it were a sandstorm in a desert. It became difficult to breathe, much less to see, and eventually even the keen eyes of Kel'thuset could no longer discern the faintest trace of the trail they were following. Quite probably there was nothing left to find, so completely had the wind cut into the unprotected earth, but the three pushed on. The rumble of distant thunder had risen to a steady crashing, interspersed by jagged flickers of lightning directly to the west and almost on top of them. The sky above had turned black, though with the blinding effect of the wind and the dust, they scarcely noticed this added hindrance to their vision. Bit by bit, a heavy haze moved closer from the western horizon. A haze that was clearly formed by sheet upon sheet of driving rain blown by the shrieking wind. Finally, it became so bad that Panamon yelled wildly above the rush of the wind for a halt.
"It's no use. We've got to find shelter before that storm hits us."
"We can't give up now," Shay cried angrily, his words almost entirely drowned out by a sudden crash of thunder.
"Don't be a fool."
The tall thief struggled to his side, dropping to one knee as he peered through the blowing dust, his hands shielding his eyes from the stinging, blinding particles. To the right, he spotted a large hill dotted with clusters of overhanging boulders that appeared to offer some shelter against the force of the wind. Signaling the other two, he abandoned all attempts to proceed north and turned toward the rocks. Heavy drops of rain were beginning to fall, striking with chilling effect against the warm skin of the sweating men. The crashing of thunder had risen to deafening proportions. Shay continued to peer northward into the darkness, unwilling to accept Panamon's decision to give up the chase when he knew they were so very close. They had almost reached the shelter of the rocks when he saw something moving. A dazzling flash of lightning outlined a small form near the crest of a tall hill far, far ahead, struggling madly to gain the summit in the face of the driving wind. Yelling frantically, the little Veilman grabbed Panamon's arm and pointed toward the distant hill, now almost totally invisible in the darkness. For a second, the three remained frozen in place, searching the blackness as the storm descended on them in blinding sheets of rain, completely drenching them in seconds. Then the lightning flashed with shattering brightness a second time to reveal again the distant hill with its tiny challenger still clawing wildly for footing near the crest. Then the vision was gone, and the rain fell again.
"It's him! It's him!" yelled Shay in frenzied recognition. "I'm going after him!"
Without waiting for the other two, the excited Veilman plunged down the side of the wet embankment, determined that the sword should not escape him again.
"Shay! No, Shay!" Panamon called after him in vain. "Kelset, get him!"
Lunging quickly down the hill, the giant troll overtook the little Veilman in several leaps, picking him up effortlessly with one huge arm and carrying him back toward the waiting Panamon. Shay was yelling and kicking furiously, but he had no chance of breaking the troll's iron grip. The storm had reached its peak already, the rain cutting away the unprotected landscape in huge chunks of earth and rock that washed down into the gullies to form small, wild rivers. Panamon led them into the rocks, ignoring Shay's repeated threats and pleas as he searched for shelter on the east slope of the hill, away from the force of the wind and rain. After a quick study, he chose a point high on the crest which was protected on three sides by large clusters of boulders that would offer good protection from the force of the storm, if not from its wetness and chill. Scrambling wearily, fighting with the little strength left them against the incredible thrust of the wind, the three at last reached the meager shelter, where they collapsed in exhaustion. Panamon quickly signaled Kelset to release the struggling Shay. Angrily, the Veilman confronted the tall adventurer, the rain running into his eyes and mouth in steady rivulets.
"Are you mad?" he exploded against the shriek of the wind and the deep, constant rumble of the storm. "I could have caught him. I could have had him."
"Shay, listen to me," Panamon cut in quickly as he peered through the heavy grayness to meet the other's angry gaze. There was a sudden moment of stilled voices in the roar of the Northland storm as Shay hesitated.
"He was too far ahead to be caught in this kind of a storm. We would have all been blown away or injured in mudslides. It's too treacherous in these hills to travel 10 feet in a heavy rainstorm, much less several miles. Relax a bit and cool your temper. We can pick up the remains of the gnome when this gale blows over."
For a second, Shay felt compelled to argue the point, but again he paused and the anger quickly subsided as his good sense returned, and he realized that Panamon was right. The full force of the storm was tearing away at the unprotected land, stripping away its barren face and reshaping its stark features. Slowly the hills were washing down into the waterlogged gullies, and the ancient Strelaheim plains began to widen gradually into the vast Northland. Huddled against the cold of the massive boulders, Shay stared out into the sheets of rain as they came and passed in endless torrents, masking out the desolation of this lifeless, dying land. It seemed as if there were no one else alive but the three of them. Perhaps if the storm continued long enough, they would all be washed away and life could begin anew, he thought disconsolately. Although the rain did not fall directly on them within the small refuge, they could not escape the chilling dampness of their waterlogged clothing, and so their discomfort persisted. At first they sat in expectant silence, as if waiting for the storm to abate and the pursuit of Orlfane to begin again. But gradually they grew weary of the lonely vigil and settled back to other pastimes, convinced the rain and the wind would claim the entire day. They ate a little food, more from common sense than hunger, and then tried to sleep as best they could in the close quarters. Panamon had managed to salvage 2 blankets from his pack, which had been sealed in watertight wrappings, and these he passed to Shay. The grateful Veilman refused, offering them to his friends, but the giant Kelset,
who seemed seldom very distraught by anything, was already asleep. So Panamon and Shay wrapped themselves in the warmth of the blankets, huddled next to each other on one side of the enclosure, and stared quietly into the falling rain. After a time they began to talk of things past, of quiet times and distant places which they felt compelled to share in this hour of vague despondency and loneliness. As usual, Panamon carried the conversation, but the stories of his travels were not the same as before. The element of improbability and wildness had been lifted, and for the first time, Shay knew the colorful thief was talking about the real Panamon Creel. It was idle, almost carefree talk that passed between the two men, a bit like the conversation of two old friends reunited after many years. Panamon told of his youth and the hard times the people all around him had known and lived with while he grew into manhood. There were no excuses, no regrets offered, but only the simple narrative of years long past that lingered on in memories. The little Veilman told about his boyhood with his brother Flick, recalling their wild, exciting expeditions into the Dalm forests. He spoke in smiles about the unpredictable Menyon Lee, who in vague ways suggested Panamon Creel as a young man. Time drifted away as they talked, shutting out the storm and drawing the two strangely close to one another for the first time since they had met. As the hours passed and the darkness came, Shay grew to understand the other man, to know him as he could not have known him otherwise. Perhaps the thief understood Shay a little better as well. The Veilman wanted to believe so. At last, when night shrouded the entire land and even the pounding rain had disappeared from view, so that nothing remained but the sound of the wind and the splash of puddles and rivers, the conversation drew itself around to the sleeping Kelset. In quiet tones, the two men speculated about the giant rock troll's origin, trying to understand what had brought him to them, what had made him undertake this suicidal journey into the Northland. It was his home, they knew, and perhaps he planned to return to the distant Charnel Mountains. Yet had he not been driven from there? If not by his own people, then by something equally powerful and compelling. The Skull-Bearer had known him on sight. But how? Even Panamon admitted that Kelset was more than a mere thief and adventurer. There was tremendous pride and courage in his bearing, a deep intelligence in his silent determination, and somewhere in his past, a terrible secret he had chosen to share with no one. Something unspeakable had happened to him, and both men could sense that it had something to do with the Warlock Lord, if only in an indirect way. There had been fear in the Skull-Bearer's eyes when he had recognized the massive troll. The two men talked a while longer until sleep came in the early morning hours, then wrapped in the blankets for protection from the chill of the night and the rain, they drifted into slumber. Chapter 27
"You there! Hold it a minute!"
The sharp command came out of the darkness behind Flick, cutting knife-like to the bone of his already waning courage. In slow shock, the terrified Veilman turned, lacking sufficient presence of mind even to attempt to run. He had been discovered at last. It was useless to draw the short hunting knife still grasped firmly beneath the hunting cloak, but his unresponding fingers remained locked in place as his eyes sought out the dim form of the approaching enemy. His comprehension of the gnome language was poor, but the tone of voice alone was enough to enable him to understand that brief command. Rigidly he watched a bulky, cursing form emerge from out of the darkness of the tents.
"Don't just stand there," the voice shrilled angrily as the roundish form waddled closer. "Lend a hand where it's needed."
Astonished,
The veilman peered closely at the squat figure as his discoverer moved toward him, the thick arms laden with trays and platters and on the verge of dropping everything with each hesitant step of the stubby legs. Almost without thinking, Flick sprang to the fellow's assistance, removing the upper layer of trays and cradling them in his own arms, his nose catching the savory smell of freshly cooked meat and vegetables seeping from beneath the covers to the warm platters.
"There now, that's a whole sight better." The stocky gnome breathed a sigh of relief. "I might have spilled the whole mess if I'd had to go another step on my own. A whole army encamped here, and can I get anyone to help carry the chieftain's own dinners? Not one gnome so much as offers. I have to do it all. It's maddening. But you're a good fellow to lend a hand. I'll see you're properly repaid with a good meal, huh?"
Flick didn't know what the verbose fellow was saying for the most part, and it didn't really matter. What did matter was that he had not been discovered after all. Breathing his silent gratitude, Flick adjusted his armload of food while his new companion continued to ramble on merrily about nothing, the heavy trays balanced precariously in the stubby arms. From beneath the concealing darkness of the hunting cloak's wide hood, the wary veilman nodded in pretended understanding of the other's conversation, his eyes still fastened intently on the shadows moving within the great tent before them. The thought remained indelibly fixed in his mind. He had to get inside that tent. He had to know what was going on in there. But then, almost as if he had read Flick's mind, the little gnome began to move toward the canvas housing with measured steps, the trays before him, the little yellow face half turned so that his unending monologue might be better heard by his newfound companion. There was no question about it now. They were delivering dinner to the people in that tent, to the chieftains of the two nations comprising this giant army, and to the dreaded Skull-Bearer. "This is madness," Flick thought suddenly. "I'll be spotted the instant they lay eyes on me." But he needed that one quick look inside. Then they were at the entrance, standing quietly before the two giant troll guards who towered over them like trees over stalks of grass. Flick could not bring himself to look anywhere but downward, though he was conscious of the fact that had he drawn himself up to his full height to face the enemy, he would have found himself staring directly into an armored, bark-like chest. Even though he was totally dwarfed in size, Flick's self-appointed friend barked a sharp command for admittance, apparently convinced that his presence was earnestly desired by those within. Or at least the food he bore was. Quickly one of the sentries stepped into the brightly lit interior of the canopy to speak briefly to someone, then reappeared a moment later, silently beckoning the two men to enter. With a quick nod over his shoulder to the trembling Flick, the little gnome pushed past the guards into the tent, and the veilman, scarcely daring to breathe, followed dutifully, praying for yet another miracle. The interior of the large canvas structure was comparatively well lighted by slow-burning torches set on iron standards about a large, heavy wooden table that stood unoccupied at the center of the enclosure. There were trolls of varying size moving busily within the great tent, some carrying rolled charts and maps from the table to a large brass-bound chest, while the others prepared to sit down to a long-awaited evening meal. All wore the military trappings and insignia of Matarans, troll commanders. The rear section of the canvas enclosure was screened off by a heavy tapestry, which even the bright torchlight could not penetrate. The air in the army headquarters was smoky and fetid, so heavy, in fact, that Flick found it almost difficult to breathe. Weapons and armor lay piled neatly about the room, and battered shields hung on iron standards like crude attempts at decoration. Flick could still sense the undeniable presence of the terrifying skullbearer, and he quickly concluded that the dark monster was behind the bleak tapestry in the other section of the tent. Such a creature did not eat. Its mortal self had long since passed into dust, and the spirit that remained needed only the fire of the warlock lord to nourish its hunger. Then abruptly, the Veilman saw something else. At the rear of the front portion of the enclosure, close to the tapestry and half hidden by the torch smoke and moving trolls, was a dim form seated in a tall wooden chair. Flick started involuntarily, certain for an instant that the man was the missing Shay. The eager trolls were moving up to him now, removing the platters of food and placing them on the heavy table, and for a moment they blocked the Veilman's view of the figure. The trolls conversed quietly among themselves as they stood over the two servers, their strange tongue completely unintelligible to Flick, who was attempting to shrink farther down into the shadowed folds of his hunting cloak in the revealing torchlight. He should have been discovered, but the unsuspecting troll commanders were tired and hungry, and much too concerned with the invasion plans to notice the unusual features of the rather large gnome who had waited on them. The last of the trays was removed and set upon the table as the Matarans gathered wearily about it to begin the meal. The little gnome who had brought Flick into the quarters turned to leave, but the eager Veilman paused a moment longer to study quickly the form at the rear. It was not Shay. The prisoner was Elven, a man of about 35, with strong, intelligent features. More, it was impossible to tell at this distance. But Flick felt certain it was Eventine, the young elven king who Alanon had declared could mean the difference between victory or defeat for the Southland. It was the Westland, the great secluded kingdom of the elven people that housed the mightiest army of the free world. If the Sword of Shannara were lost, then this man alone commanded the power to stop the awesome might of the warlock lord. This man, a prisoner, whose life could be snuffed out at a single command. Flick felt a hand on his shoulder, and he started violently at the sudden touch. "Come on now, come on, we must leave," the hushed voice of the little gnome cajoled him earnestly. "You can stare at him some other time. He'll still be here." Flick hesitated again, a sudden, daring plan forming as he stood there. If he had taken time to dwell on it, the idea would have terrified him, but there was no time, and he had long since passed the point of rational deliberation. It was already too late to escape the encampment and return to Alanon before daylight, and he had come to this dreadful place to do an important task. One which remained uncompleted. He would not leave yet. "Come on," I said, "we have to—" "Hey, what are you doing?" The little gnome yelled involuntarily as Flick grasped him harshly by one arm and propelled him forward toward the troll commanders, who had paused momentarily in their eating at the sharp cry and were staring curiously at the two small figures. Quickly, Flick raised one hand and pointed questioningly at the bound prisoner. The trolls followed his gaze mechanically. Flick waited breathlessly as one of them gave a curt command and the others shrugged and nodded. "You're mad. You're out of your head," the little gnome gasped in amazement, trying vainly to hold his voice down to a whisper. "What do you care whether or not the elf gets something to eat? What does it matter if he shrivels up and dies?" His comments were cut short. A troll called over to them, one gnarled hand extending a plate of food. Flick hesitated momentarily, glancing quickly at his astonished companion, who was shaking his head and grumbling inaudibly at the whole proposition. "Don't look at me," he exclaimed shortly. "This was your idea. You feed him." Flick failed to pick up everything the gnome said, but he got the gist of the exclamation and moved quickly to take possession of the plate. At no time did he glance into anyone's face for more than an instant, and even then the shadows of the wide cowl masked his identity. He kept his cloak wrapped tightly about him as he moved cautiously toward the prisoner on the other side of the tent, inwardly cheering madly that his gamble had paid off. If he could get close enough to the bound figure of Eventine, he could let him know that Al-Anon was close and that some sort of attempt to rescue him would be made. Still wary, he glanced back once at the other occupants of the enclosure, but the troll commanders had returned to their dinner and only the little gnome chef was still staring after him. If he had tried this kind of foolish stunt anywhere but in the very teeth of the enemy forces, Flick was well aware that he would have been discovered immediately. But here, in the commander's own headquarters, with the awesome skull-bearer just yards away and the entire area surrounded by thousands of Northlanders, the idea of anyone even sneaking into camp, let alone into this guarded tent, was preposterous. Quietly, Flick approached the waiting captive, his face still concealed within the dark recesses of the hood, the plate of food extended before him. Eventine was of normal height and stature for a man, although for an elf he was big. He wore woodland garb covered by the remnants of a chainmail vest, the worn insignia of the House of Elicidal still faintly visible in the dim torchlight. His strong face was battered and cut, apparently from the battle that had ended with his capture. At first glance there appeared to be nothing distinctive about him. He was not the kind of man who would be singled out in a group. His expression was set and impassive as Flick came to a halt directly in front of him, his thoughts apparently concentrated elsewhere. Then his head moved slightly as if aware he was being studied, and the deep green eyes fastened on the small figure facing him. When Flick saw those eyes, he froze in sudden shock. They reflected a fierce determination, a fiery strength of character and inner conviction that reminded the Veilman, rather strangely, of Al-Anon. They reached into him, seized his own mind in a manner of speaking, demanding his attention, his obedience. He had seen this look in no other man, not even Balinor, whom they had all felt drawn to as a natural leader. Like those of the dark druid, the eyes of the elven king frightened him. Looking down quickly at the plate of food in his hands, Flick paused to consider what he should do next. Mechanically, he fitted a piece of the still warm meat to the tip of the fork. His corner of the large tent was dimly lit, and the haze of smoke aided in concealing his movements from the enemy. Only the little gnome was watching him closely, he was certain, but a single mistake would bring them all down on him. Slowly, he raised his face until the light from the torches had fully revealed his features to the watchful captive. As their eyes met, a flicker of curiosity crossed the otherwise impassive elven face, and one eyebrow lifted sharply. Quickly, Flick pursed his lips, warning silence, and looked down again at the food. Eventine was unable to feed himself, so the Veilman began to hand-feed him slowly and carefully as he planned his next step. Now the captive elven king knew he was not a gnome, but Flick was terrified that if he spoke to the elf, even in a faint whisper, he would be overheard. He abruptly recalled that the skull-bearer was just on the other side of the heavy tapestry, perhaps only inches away, and if he should possess unusual hearing powers. But there was no other alternative. He had to communicate somehow with the prisoner before he left. There might not be another chance. Mustering the little courage he had reserved, the Veilman leaned forward a few inches farther as he lifted the fork, carefully putting himself between Eventine and the trolls. Al-Anon. The word was spoken in a barely audible whisper. Eventine took the proffered bite of food and responded with a faint nod, his face stony and impassive. Flick had had enough. It was time to get out of there before his luck ran out. Taking the plate of half-finished food, he slowly turned and walked back across the enclosure to the waiting gnome chef, whose face mirrored mingled disgust and edginess. The troll commanders were still eating as he passed them, their conversation low and earnest. They didn't even look up. Flick handed the plate to the little gnome as he passed him, mumbling something incoherent, then quickly hastened from the tent, exiting between the two giant troll guards before his astonished companion could think to act. As he strolled unconcernedly away from the tent, the gnome appeared suddenly in the open entrance, yelling and grumbling in garbled phrases that the Veilman could not begin to comprehend. Turning, the Veilman waved quickly to the little figure, a faint smile of satisfaction on his broad face, and disappeared into the darkness. At dawn, the Northland army began its march southward toward Callahorn. Flick had been unable to work his way clear of the encampment before then. So, as a bitter and gravely concerned Alanon watched from the seclusion of the dragon's teeth, the subject of his misgivings was forced to continue his disguise another day. The heavy morning rains had almost persuaded the Veilman to make a dash for safety, so convinced was he that the downpour would wash out the coloring Alanon had applied to his skin to give it a yellow hue. But escape in daylight was impossible, so he wrapped himself tightly in the hunting cloak and tried to remain inconspicuous. Before long, he was thoroughly drenched. To his happy astonishment, the yellow coloring on his skin did not appear to be washing out after all. There was a certain amount of fading, but in the excitement of moving the camp, no one had time to take notice of anyone else. It was the terrible weather, in fact, that saved Flick from being unmasked. Had it been a warm, dry summer day filled with sunshine and good spirits, the army would have been more concerned with exchanging pleasantries. If the sun had been shining, there would have been no need for the heavy hunting cloaks, and Flick would have attracted the attention of everyone around him by continuing to wear his. Once it had been removed, the Northlanders would have seen through his thin disguise immediately. The bright sunlight would have revealed to anyone casting so much as a passing glance in his direction that the Veilman did not even remotely resemble a gnome in his facial bone structure and individual features. The heavy rains and wind saved Flick from all of this and permitted him to remain isolated and concealed as the huge invasion force trudged steadily across the grasslands into the Southland Kingdom of Callahorn. The bad weather persisted throughout the remainder of that day and, as it turned out, for several days thereafter. The storm clouds sullenly locked in place between the sun and the earth in great gray and black masses that churned and rolled with ferocious discontent. The rains fell unchecked, sometimes in pounding sheets driven by the unrelenting force of the west winds, sometimes in a steady, melancholy drizzle that gave false hope to the belief that the storm's end was near. The air was chill and at times almost bitter, leaving an already water-drenched army shivering and disconsolate. Flick remained on the move throughout the day's tiring, unpleasant march, soaked through by the blowing rains, but relieved that he could move about without calling attention to himself. He made it a point to avoid walking with any particular group for very long, always staying apart, always avoiding a situation which might force him to engage in conversation with anyone. The Northland invasion force was so vast that it was an easy matter to avoid ever being with the same men twice, and his deception was further facilitated by the fact that there appeared to be no overt attempts to exercise marching discipline over the Great Army. Either discipline was extremely lax or so thoroughly ingrained in the individual soldier that superior officers were not needed to maintain order. Flick could not conceive of the latter and concluded that fear of the omnipresent skull-bearers and their mysterious master kept the individual troll or gnome from doing anything foolish. In any event, the little Veilman remained just another member of the Northland army, biding his time until nightfall when he planned to make his escape back to Alanon. By mid-afternoon, the army had reached the swollen banks of the Upper Myrmidon, directly across from the island city of Kern. Again, the invasion force encamped. Its commanders realized immediately that due to the heavy rain, the Myrmidon could not be crossed without tremendous hazard. Even so, it would require large rafts capable of transporting vast numbers of men in order to secure the far bank. They had no rafts, so those would have to be built. That would require several days, and by that time the storms should have diminished, and the waters of the Myrmidon retreated sufficiently to permit an easy crossing. Across the river in the city of Kern, the Northland force had been sighted while Minion Lee still slept in the house of Shurl Ravenlock, and the people were beginning to panic as they realized the extent of their danger. The enemy invasion force could not afford to bypass Kern and proceed to Tirsis, the main objective. Kern would have to be taken. Considering the size of the city and the extent of the reduced army defending it, this would not be difficult. Only the rising river and the fortuitous storm delayed its fall. Flick knew nothing of these matters, his own mind preoccupied with thoughts of escape. The storm could abate in a matter of hours, leaving him defenseless in the very heart of the enemy camp. Worse still, the actual invasion of the Southland was underway, and a battle with the Border Legion of Calahorn could come at any time. Suppose he was forced into battle as a gnome hunter against his own friends. Flick had changed considerably since his first meeting with Alanon weeks earlier in Shady Vale. Developing an inner strength and maturity and a confidence in himself he had never believed himself capable of sustaining. But the past 24 hours had proved a supreme test of raw courage and perseverance that even a seasoned border fighter like Hendel would have found frightening. The little Veilman, unseasoned and vulnerable, could sense that he was on the verge of cracking under the extreme pressures, of giving way completely to the terrible sense of fear and doubt gripping him with every move he made. Shay had been the reason behind his decision to make the hazardous journey to Perrinor in the beginning, but more than that, he had been the one steadying influence on a pessimistic, distrustful Flick. Now Shay had been lost to them all for many days with little indication as to whether he was dead or alive, and his faithful brother, while refusing to give up hope that they would eventually find him, had never felt more alone. Not only was he in a strange land, embroiled in a mad venture against a mysterious creature not even of the mortal world, but now he was isolated in the midst of thousands of Northlanders who would kill him without a second thought the moment they discovered who he really was. The entire situation was impossible, and he was beginning to doubt that there was any real point to anything he had done. While the vast army encamped on the banks of the Myrmidon in the shadows of the late afternoon and the gray of twilight, a disconsolate, frightened Veilman moved uneasily through the camp, trying desperately to maintain a firm grip on his fading resolve. The rain continued to fall steadily, masking faces and bodies until they were merely moving shadows, drenching men and earth alike in a cold, cheerless haze. Fires were out of the question in such weather, so the evening remained dark and impenetrable, and the men remained faceless. As he moved silently about the encampment, Flick mentally noted the arrangement of the commander's quarters, the deployment of the gnome and troll forces, and the setting of the sentry lines, thinking that this knowledge might be of some value to Alanon in planning a rescue of the Elven King. He relocated without difficulty the large tent that housed the troll Matarans and their valuable prisoner, but like the rest of the enemy camp, it was dark and cold, shrouded in mist and rain. There was no way even to be sure that Eventine was still there. He could have been moved to another tent or removed from the camp entirely during the march southward. The two giant troll sentries remained posted at the entrance, but there was no sign of movement within. Flick studied the silent structure for several long minutes and then slipped quietly away. As night descended and troll and gnome alike retired to a chill, water-drenched slumber that more closely resembled an uneasy doze, the Veilman decided to make his escape. He had no idea where he might find Alanon. He could only presume the giant druid had followed the invasion force as it moved southward to Callahorn. In the rain and darkness, it would be nearly impossible to locate him, and the best he could hope to do would be to hide out somewhere until daylight and then attempt to find him. He moved silently toward the eastern fringes of the encampment, treading carefully over the huddled forms of the half-sleeping men, winding his way through the baggage and armor, still wrapped protectively in the water-soaked hunting cloak. He could very likely have walked through the camp without any disguise on this night. In addition to the darkness and the persistent drizzle, which had finally begun to taper off, a low rolling mist had moved across the grasslands, blanketing everything so completely that a man could see no more than a few feet in front of his nose. Without wanting to, Flick found himself thinking about Shay. Finding his brother had been the major reason behind his decision to slip into this camp disguised as a gnome. He had learned nothing of Shay, though he had scarcely expected to. He had been fully prepared to be discovered and captured within minutes after he entered the vast encampment. Yet he was still free. If he could escape now and find Alanon, then they could find a way to help the imprisoned elven king and— Flick paused. His progress abruptly halted as he sank down into a crouch beside a canvas-covered pile of heavy baggage. Even if he did eventually find his way back to the druid, what could they hope to do for Eventine? It would take time to reach Balinor in the walled city of Tirsis, and they had little time remaining. What would become of Shay while they were trying to find a way to rescue Eventine, who was unquestionably more valuable to the Southland since the loss of the Sword of Shannara than Flick's brother? Suppose that Eventine knew something about Shay. Suppose he knew where Shay was, perhaps even where the powerful sword had been carried. Flick's tired mind began to rush quickly over the possibilities. He had to find Shay. Nothing else was really important to him at this point. There was no one left to help him since Menyon had gone ahead to warn the cities of Callahorn. Even Alanon seemed to have exhausted his vast resources without result. But Eventine might know Shay's whereabouts, and Flick alone was in a position to do something about that possibility. Shivering in the chill night air, he brushed the rain from his eyes and peered in numbed disbelief into the mist. How could he even consider going back? He was virtually on the edge of panic and exhaustion now without taking any further risks. Yet the night was perfect. Dark. Misty, impenetrable. Such an opportunity might not come again in the short time left, and there was no one to take advantage of it but himself. Madness. Madness, he thought desperately. If he went back there, if he tried to free Eventine alone, he would be killed. Yet he decided suddenly that that was exactly what he was going to do. Shay was the only one he really cared about, and the imprisoned elven king appeared to be the only man who might have any idea what had happened to his missing brother. He had come this far alone, spending 24 torturous hours trying to stay hidden, trying to stay alive in a camp of enemies that had somehow overlooked him. He had even managed to get inside the troll commander's tent, to get close enough to the great king of the elven people to pass him that brief message. Perhaps it had all been the result of blind chance, miraculous and fleeting, yet could he flee now, with so little accomplished? He smiled faintly at his own dim sense of the heroic, an irresistible challenge he had always successfully ignored before, but which now ensnared him and would undoubtedly prove his undoing. Cold, exhausted, close to mental and physical collapse, he would nevertheless take this final gamble simply because circumstances had placed him here at this time and this place. He alone. How Menyon Lee would smile to see this, he thought grimly, wishing at the same time that the wild Highlander were here to lend a little of his reckless courage. But Menyon was not here, and time was slipping quickly away. Then, almost before he realized it, he had retraced his steps through the sleeping men and the rolling fog, and was crouching breathlessly within yards of the long Matarin tent. The mist and his own sweat ran in small rivulets down his heated face and into his soaked garments as he stared in motionless silence at his objective. Doubts crowded remorselessly into his tired mind. The terrible creature that served the warlock lord had been there earlier, a black, soulless instrument of death that would destroy Flick without thinking. It was probably still within, waiting in sleepless watch for exactly this sort of foolish attempt to free Eventine. Worse still, the Elven King might have been removed, taken anywhere. Flick forced the doubts aside and breathed deeply. Slowly he mustered his courage as he finished his study of the canvas enclosure, which was no more than a misty shadow in the unbroken darkness before him. He could not even make out the forms of the giant troll guards. One hand reached into the damp tunic beneath his cloak and withdrew the short hunting knife, his only weapon. Mentally, he pinpointed the position on the canvas of the silent tent where he imagined Eventine had been bound at the time he had fed him that previous night. Then slowly, he crept forward. Flick crouched next to the wet canvas of the great tent, the chill imprint of the weave rough against his cheek as he listened for the sounds of human life that stirred uneasily within. He must have paused for 15 long minutes, motionless in the fog and the dark, as he listened intently to the muffled sound of heavy breathing and intermittent snores emitted by the sleeping Northlanders. Briefly, he contemplated attempting to sneak through the front entrance of the structure, but quickly discarded that idea as he realized that once he was inside, he would have to navigate his way in the darkness over a number of sleeping trolls in order to reach Eventine. Instead, he selected the section of the tent where he imagined the heavy tapestry formed a divider, the corner in which the Elven King had been bound to the chair. Then, with agonizing slowness, he inserted the tip of his hunting knife into the rain-soaked canvas and began to cut downward, one strand at a time, just a fraction of an inch with each pressured stroke. He would never remember how long it took him to make the 3-foot incision. Only the endless sawing in the silence of the night, afraid that the slightest sound of tearing would arouse the entire tent. As the long minutes passed, he began to feel as if he were entirely alone in the giant encampment, deserted by all human life in the black shroud of the mist and the rain. No one came near him, or at least he did not see anyone pass, and the sound of human voices did not reach his straining ears. He might indeed have been alone in the world for those brief, desperate minutes. Then a long, vertical slit in the glistening canvas stared back at him in slack anticipation, inviting him to enter. Cautiously he advanced, feeling his way carefully with his hands just inside the opening. There was nothing except the canvas floor, dry but as cold as the damp earth that braced his knees and feet. Carefully he inserted his head, peering fearfully into the deep blackness of the interior that was filled with the sounds of sleeping men. He waited for his eyes to adjust to this new darkness, trying desperately to hold his breathing to a steady, noiseless whisper, feeling horribly exposed from the